So level check 1, 2, 3. You can hear me okay?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well, we got 4 in the books, and this is our 5th. I can't believe we're still around. We got a hilarious show coming up for you today on the Suspendables. Who to blame when your team goes bad? Yeah, Russ has got lots to say about that. The craziest, dirtiest players that he's ever come across. Is there a place for fighting? And great insults on the ice. We call them chirps. Who's got the best? The prank that Russ's brother Jeff got had on is just hilarious. And Brett Hull with no filter. All that and much, much more coming up on the Suspendables. Stick around.
How you doing, Jimmy boy? How you doing? How is your...
I'm good. I just got back off a Sausage Fest golf tournament.
Nice.
Down to Baltimore. Beautiful golf course, Kays Valley. Over the top. Over the top, Russ. You know, I like to follow around Russ rich guys, and successful guys. So that's what I did. I went down there. But I got fucking drilled.
Oh, Russ. No.
Yes, I got absolutely drilled. And I don't know. I lost 300 or 400. I'm probably lying there, but it might have been a little more. Okay. And well, I can tell you this, Russ. It's a thing about getting old, Rusty. Okay.
Oh, boy.
It's a thing about getting older.
How old are you?
I'm going to be 58 this year.
Oh, and, my God.
Yeah, I look 80.
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking, who's now dead, could have played better than I did. Okay. When I was there. You know what happens, though, Russ? I'll tell you what never goes away. And maybe you can tell me about this. Is you always, no matter what, is you always think when it comes to golf or sports, I always think I'm better than I am.
Oh, boy.
And I got fucking smoked.
Well, I don't have that problem because I definitely don't think I'm better than I am.
Well, I did. Oh, so boy. I made that mistake. But it's good. Like,
so do you go in with that ego handicap? Like, are you really a 10 and you go in as a 6? So you get drilled. As soon as you get off the plane, you're losing.
I'm fucking done. You see, well, the other thing is all these guys, bunch of them live in the States. Yeah. And the other guys who do live in Ottawa, where they're from, all play golf all winter down in Florida.
Ah,
like all your buddies.
And
so I'm teeing it up with, I haven't hit a ball since last September.
Yeah.
But I'm going, that's okay. It's like riding a bike. Don't you worry about me. Lay it on. Whatever. Yeah. You guys bet for whatever you want and I'll kick your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't work. And I don't know if you notice yourself getting older, Russ, but here's the problem with me is I've noticed when I got old, as I started getting old, I'd forget names, you know, like forget a guy's name. And the biggest sign of getting older, amongst many other things, but the most obvious is always forgetting to pull my fly up after I go to the bathroom. And the real sign of getting older is often I forget to pull my fly down.
Oh my God.
That's me. What's going on with you? Signs of getting old.
Signs of getting old is when I turn the lights on and have a shower, get out of the shower and look in the mirror.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, who jumped in this body?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've been doing yoga for the last 4 months with Gretz. Wayne and I started. I was drawn to it by how great he looked. I don't know if you've seen him lately, but he looks unreal.
Wow.
So I started doing it and I've lost 20 pounds and I love it. I do it 5 days a week. And so I'm hoping I'm going to improve, but you know, the mirror doesn't lie.
Yoga.
Yeah. Yoga.
My son is I get in the shower. I can't see my balls anymore. That's when I know I'm getting fat. And you know, it reminds you of a great story, Russ. There's a couple and they wake up in the morning. They've been married for a long time and
yeah.
The wife goes in to have a shower and she comes out in the bedroom. The guy's, he's got the paper there and they have coffee in their bedroom. You know, that's old people, right? Where they have the coffee in their bedroom. Yeah. And the lady is standing in the mirror. She's naked and she's looking at herself in the mirror and she's going, oh my God, look at my freaking thighs. They're all fat and droopy in my stomach. I got all this fat and my boobs are hanging, sagging way down. Oh my God. You know, and the husband says, look at it this way, dear. You've got perfect vision. Oh, boy. So you can only hear that on this, he said.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, Russ, when we do this podcast, it is playoffs round three just started.
Yeah.
The four teams are set. San Jose is playing St. Louis.
Yeah,
right?
You
got that right.
One for
and,
one.
And Boston, of course, is playing Carolina, who's on a great run.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of shit always that happens from the fans, okay? And everything always seems to be accentuated when the playoffs come, and yet it's no different than the regular season. And one is calling for the heads, Russ, okay? After a team loses a playoff. Columbus won the first round. They wiped out Tampa Bay four straight, and everything was great, and then they lose the second one. Well, now people are calling for firings, okay?
Yeah.
And you see it all the time, Russ, so... I guess my question for you is, say teams don't even make the playoffs, where you hear it more at the postmortem. Who's at fault here, Russ, at the end of a year with, do we have to make a change, for example, if they miss the playoffs? And if we do, is it the GM? Is it the coach? Is the ownership bad? Would the players have to go? I mean, fans freak out about it.
Yeah, there's so many factors. Like, let's just... talk about LA and Chicago. They were winning for years. So they have to sign all these players to these huge contracts. And now they're aging, you know, getting a little long in the tooth.
Right.
And so they're just going through that process. And I think the fans accept that. But then high expectations up where you are in Edmonton because of the players that you've got and how exciting they are. You get Chiarelli come in there and he made some just bonehead freaking trades. And now they're starting again with, you know, some young players, but it's tough. You know, it's every team's different, but the GM builds the team, the coach coaches and the players play. And sometimes a coach runs out of time because the players stop listening. And, Torts is a tough coach, and I think the players like him, but then after a while, it kind of, you know, I think it just becomes a little bit old, but he's had success almost everywhere he's been, and they just rotate. You look at these good coaches, they end up, you know, 3, 4, 5 years in one organization, and they get onto another team, and those guys, they get recycled usually through three teams, and then they're done.
You know, fair enough, Russ, fair enough to say, you know, that trades don't work out. Well, when you use Chiarelli, for example, when it came time with the Oilers, and you said it yourself a minute ago that he made some bonehead trades. But that's all hindsight, Russ, right? That's all hindsight because no one thought he made bonehead trades before they started to go for a shit. You know what I mean? There's always it's always this. I mean, it's got to be a bit of a roll of the dice, isn't it?
For sure it is. And sometimes when you make those trades – you're getting a player who's he's done extremely well somewhere. Comes to a new place and he just doesn't fit. Like he just for whatever reason he's not fitting in. And then other guys have you know, when I left Toronto, I was in the bad books with John Brophy. I went to Montreal and my career took off. So it was really fortunate, and lucky for me that I went to a team and I got the opportunity to prove myself again. But doesn't always happen. So you're right. It is a bit of a roll of the dice. And some players just do not fit in certain situations. I've been on lots of teams and we traded for good players and they came into our organization and for whatever reason, the coach didn't like them or they didn't like the city or they didn't like the team. I don't know. It just didn't work out.
Well, let's play GM for a minute. Let's use the Oilers, a team that had high expectations. They got the best player in the league, arguably, and they got good ownership. The guy wants to spend money. They got, you know, they got Wayne Gretzky in the front office. They got all the ducks in a row here, but it didn't work out.
Right.
They didn't even make the fucking playoffs.
Right.
So what would you do?
Well, I've talked to a few people about it, and they all think that the guys I've talked to who are in the know. Think they really need puck moving defensemen, guys who can really skate and play with Connor. So I don't watch them enough to really give you, you know, like, hey, Jim, if you're going to play this fucking game with me, you got to at least give me a month's heads up.
Oh. Did I throw you under the bus? That's not that bad under the bus.
No, but that's what I've heard about their team is that they need fast puck moving defensemen that can get Connor the puck and
right. So in their case, it's players. You got to get some players.
Yeah,
and not so much your GM, but what they got? They got this new GM anyway, Ken Holland, right?
Yeah, which he's had incredible success. We all know that in Detroit. Apparently, he's a great guy. He's a BC boy who's he's moving a little bit closer to home, but I think he'll do a great job. I think he's proven himself over and over in Detroit, and he was there a long time, and I think. For Ken, it's probably an exciting challenge for him. It's totally new, and he's probably really excited about going to work where maybe in Detroit after all those years, maybe it was just getting a little bit old.
Right. So tell us this, Russ. Every fan, calls for a GM's head as much as they do a player trade or a coach, mm-hmm. or they in Ottawa's case, they hate the fucking owner. They want to kill him. What is the general manager's job, Russ, day to day? What's his deal?
Well, the GM builds the team. He hires the coaches. He fires the coaches. He's responsible for every player that's on the ice. And usually, a general manager and a coach are on the same page and they work together. Mm-hmm. And the GM will try to get players that the coach wants. He hired the guy usually, so. They're usually on the same page, and he's running the ship, and then he's got to answer to the owner until when he wants to sign somebody, he's got to go talk to the owner and tell him why he's spending millions and millions of dollars on a certain player, and so he's probably other than the ownership the most important part of the team because he's the architect of everything.
All right, now I know.
Yeah.
Now I know. Brad Marchand, okay, is a shit disturber who plays for the Boston Bruins. Good player. So he can sort of back up when he does these fucking stupid things seems to do all the time, and yet they're winning.
Yeah.
The most notorious one he did over the last few months was lick a guy's face when they were yelling.
That was last year in the playoffs, I think.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Last year in the playoffs. And then the other night after the whistle was blown, they were going to lose the game, I think. After the whistle was blown, he just sort of casually went up behind a player who wasn't looking, was on his knees getting up from the play and fucking punched him in the back of the head. And everyone's going freaky about it.
Yeah.
First of all, what's your take on this guy?
So as a player? I had the pleasure of playing with Claude Lemieux, and Claude is identical to Marchand. So I know exactly what you go through, and sometimes you're just shaking your head, going, "Really? Are you really freaking doing that right now?" Mm-hmm. And they just they lose control and they do crazy stuff. And they're so emotional.
Right.
Like Claude was so emotional. It was unbelievable. And he had the loudest voice in the arena. So when he yelled at the ref,
right,
the guy in the nosebleeds could hear what he was saying. Right. And it was his thick French accent was so freaking, it was so good. Tabernacus Nicholas, you fucking cocksucker. Are you going to have a beer with them after the fucking game?
Well, the sea sucker. Right, way to go. That's the first one of the podcast. Very good. We'll have to see. How are these guys like you played the game?
Yeah.
And some of it is dirty and for sure should be penalized. Is there sort of a nudge, nudge, wink, wink, Russ, from the coach looking at a guy like Claude Lemieux or a Brad Marchand or a fourth liner and he taps him on the shoulder and says, go out there and look after things, which really means go out there and fucking spear someone or cross-check them in the throat. Is that part of the reality of the game still?
No, because coaches are trying to control a player like Claude and Brad. They don't want them in the penalty box. They want them on the ice. And so there's never any of that. I would guess that the coaches were always trying to calm them down a little bit and not do the crazy shit, because it costs the team, right? Penalties and power plays and all that.
Right.
I think what you're talking about is when we back in the 80s and 90s, when we had the big tough guys on every team, those guys they knew, you know, they're sitting on the bench for freaking 42 minutes and then all of a sudden they're out taking a face off against somebody. They knew why they were on the ice. But the players we're talking about, like the Brad, his coach is trying to get him to stay on the ice and settle down.
Right.
So it's a fine line. You want him to be emotional, but not too much where he's costing you.
I don't know if we've talked, I forget now, from one show to the next, if we talked about your take on fighting.
Yeah, we did.
Did we talk about that? And what was your take?
We talked about, I think it should be in the game, because it's policing the game when there's fighting, and it's just a way to, you know, I think I'd said this before. I had 20 in my career, and I just got to the point where I had to fight, and I didn't want to fight, but I did. And I just think that it's a way, it's part of our game, and it should always be in there. There's less and less of it now, so it's not a big deal.
You know, I'm telling my kids, okay, this will be hard for you to believe, Russ, because you've seen I got a body like a Greek god, really, when you see it. And
oh my god,
yeah,
you're fucking blind.
Not a fighter, Russ. Okay, I was not.
You're blind. Do you have a cardboard cutout of Arnold Schwarzenegger in your bathroom?
I do. Yes, yes.
And you stick your head through the hole and shave.
Like the things at Disney. Yeah. I was telling my kids, my two boys. And this may be unpopular, but I said, if you're ever up against a fight, fucking turn and run. turn and run, man. You know, I never got many fights. And when I did, I cried. What are you telling your son?
Well, he plays college hockey.
Even outside of hockey, though. Even outside of hockey, as a kid growing up.
I definitely outside, you don't want to be fighting, because that's how kids get freaking stabbed. Or worse, but I tell my son, you know, don't bother fighting, because the game, even though I just said, you know, I agree with fighting in the NHL, it's really not a big deal anymore in the game. And so I just said, you don't really need to know how to fight. So just stay away from it. That's all. And in college, you can't fight. So
who was the dirtiest guy You ever played against?
Yeah, or the dirtiest player what I played against was Chris King.
Yep.
And I don't know what team I was on. I was playing against him. He was with the New York Rangers. Mm-hmm. And he was with Montreal. And he kept coming up to me and he says, I'm going to carve your eyes out. I'm going to knock your teeth out. So I mentioned to the ref, I go, Chris King keeps saying all this shit to me, and I'm starting to believe him. So just keep an eye on him. And frick, after the first whistle of the second period, he got like 10-minute misconduct because what he was doing to me. And the ref was like, holy shit, he wants to kill you. But he was dirty. He was really dirty. I'm sure there's many, many more players, but he's one that stuck out in my days of playing, that he was a dirty guy.
Mess, I watched Mark Messier in a game one time in Ottawa against against Vancouver. A couple of stories here. So I've always wondered, you know, when the puck moves down to the other end, and you'll often see there might have been a scrum, you know, in front of the goalie. And everyone takes off and skates down the other end, and Mess was hanging back and then turned around and was yapping something to the goalie, you know? And then he fucked off down to the other end to get back in the play. And I said to him after the game, I'm going, what are you saying to him? What'd you say to them? Well, there he goes. Well, he healed me in the back of the leg, right? With his stick. He chopped me. And I just turned to him and said, if you ever, ever, ever fucking do that again, okay, I will carve out one of your fucking eyes, because I don't care. Because I don't care.
Yeah.
And he said it always worked. Plus, you could back it up, you know. He was He was sort of crazy.
Mess in Dallas playing. He was playing for the Rangers and I was in Dallas and he elbowed Mike Bedano and knocked him out. Yeah. Oh my God. Like just a sneaky, quick elbow, boom, Medano's down, right. Out cold. Ambulance comes. They bring out a stretcher. You can Google this.
I remember that. And the fucking wheels collapsed. Medano, the guy didn't set the wheels.
They get him on the stretcher.
On the
and our announcer goes, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Medano. And they wheel him off the ice and everybody's clapping, right? You get to the ambulance at the doors and they fucking dropped him. and then he's all strapped in, hit his head again on the cement.
Yeah, I remember that. Speaking of mess, he told me, well, what you do is, so you've got the the St. John's ambulance, that's what it is in Canada anyway, the St. John ambulance, yeah. Are all the guys there. Mess said you just give the guy a jersey, who carries out anyone who's injured, he'll fucking drop them for you. I remember that. Funny. Yeah, that was hilarious, man. What about Dirtiest Guys? What about the chirp? The refereeing, okay, is the other topic here that I've written down. I can't believe I'm doing all the show prep. So everyone's, accentuated in the playoffs that everyone is freaking out about bad calls. Okay, and there are some missed calls for sure. If I've got one in my head, I've got three or four, and you maybe have some too that you've seen after. And it's not a perfect world, but is there something we can do, Russ? Is there anything you don't like when refs miss these calls, even through video review, or even if they're allowed to review it or not? This seems to happen, and people are arguing that it's changing the outcome of the game. So what's your take on that about the refereeing?
Well, they've got two out there, so, they shouldn't miss. They shouldn't miss too many.
But they do.
But they do. And then the replay has helped. The coach's challenge has helped. I think where it's helped is with the goal, with the puck. If it crossed the line, it didn't cross the line. Did the guy touch the goalie? But penalties, they're going to miss penalties. It is part of the game that unfortunately, it's two human beings out there trying to control a game and you can't cover the ice completely when the play's moving so fast. So they're going to fuck up. You just try to get the guy, the league tries to get the best referees that in the playoffs that don't miss shit.
Right.
And we're, unfortunately, we're seeing it.
So you're all about the review in sports generally, the video review.
I like it if it doesn't take frickin' 20 minutes. There should be a time limit because that changes the momentum of the game. If you allow another team 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes to rest and get back into it just because they're looking at frickin' videos, that changes the outcome of the game by letting guys rest. Or you're on a roll and you take that away by, not by looking at these freaking calls. So I just think the time limit should be 2 minutes or less. And if they can't figure it out, they can't figure it out. But fuck this, 7-8 minutes bullshit. No,
I don't.
Stupid.
Listen, I don't care how long it takes if you get it right.
Yeah.
You get it right, taking it too long. Referees, Russ, you must have heard some good shit, man, on the ice about, chirping the refs and even if not the refs, you must have heard some great chirps with players. One of the funniest I ever heard about Pepper, Jim Poplinski, who won a cup with the Flames, funny guy in his own right, was playing with Tim Hunter, of course, who just had a very successful, was it World Junior? Did he coach the juniors last year?
Yeah.
Timmy
Hunter. And fucking lost.
And lost. Yeah. Okay. But he was good. He was good. anyway, he's got a fucking nose on him. Okay, that goes from here to forever. Okay, he's got the biggest nose in the world, and Pepper was telling me that the funniest thing ever back in the 80s, before people had cell phones or anything. Hunter comes on the ice, and Pepper hears a fan yell out, going, looking at this huge nose that he had, and the fan goes, "Hey, Hunts, hang up the phone." He's in fucking lost the face off. You know, he was laughing so hard. You got to have a million of those. You've heard on the ice.
I'm glad you brought up Hunts because I was playing for Montreal and he was playing for Calgary that year. Those fuckers beat us in the finals. Right. But that at New Year's, we always played them New Year's Eve. So he gets in a fight with somebody on our team. I can't remember, maybe Martinson or something. And the referee comes over to the Calgary bench and goes, Hunts's nose is bleeding. Can you give me a towel? And I said, get him a fucking bed sheet. and both benches absolutely, like their bench was laughing as hard, if not harder than our bench. And the ref took the towel across the ice and he was belly laughing all the way over to the penalty box.
So anyway, we're talking about chirps, right? And so Paul Stewart, who was a longtime referee in the NHL and a good one, he was going to retire. So he had said somewhere in the press the night before a game, you know, what's he going to do after he finishes refereeing his last game? He said, I'm going to go to a bridge and I'm going to throw my skates off there. And Sather that night chirps out to Stewart while he's on the ice saying, look at, do us all a favor. When you throw your skates off that bridge, make sure you keep them on.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And Gretzky had, you know what? Gretz had a good chirp, subtle, because sometimes he'd come into games where they've decided someone's going to shadow him. Okay.
Yeah.
The whole game, right? They don't always do it because it didn't always work, of course, but they would shadow him, you know, and he's, you know, too close. The guy's ready to get the shit kicked out of him by some mink or whatever, and he keeps following Gretz around the ice like a fucking maniac. And Gretz's best one was looking at the guy and going, hey, and grabbing his jersey to turn it around, going, the fuck is your name?
Anyway. Yeah.
What do you got?
I used to say that to young guys when they come in the league and they're chirping me, and I would say, turn around so I know who the fuck I'm arguing with.
What about refs? Did you ever chirp them or not?
Oh yeah, I sometimes just couldn't handle the refs, and I just couldn't hold back, and I'd be giving it to them. And one day, one guy, I don't know his name, he's like, I said, you're fucking awful tonight. You've missed every freaking call. That's a fucking joke. And he hands me his whistle. I'm on the bench. He goes, you want to do it? And I go, no, I don't want the cut and pay. Fuck off.
All right.
Yeah. I wasn't winning any friends for the rest of my career with him.
I heard another guy, the ref went to hand him the whistle. And the guy said, I would, but I'm worried about all those open sores on your mouth, you fucker. One of the best I always heard was it's kind of funny, but it stops a guy in his tracks and the guy's chirping him going, fuck you. You know, I'm going to rip your head off. And then the other guy will go, hey, listen, say hi to your wife. Guy go fucking nuts, you know?
This guy, we're playing for Dallas in Vancouver, and this guy was just giving it to Shane Chirla.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, Chirla was our tough guy, and he's like, fuck you, Chirla, you piece of shit. You know, and after about halfway through the game, Chirls turns around to him. The guy's with like four buddies, right? Yeah. He says, would you mind telling your wife to get out of my room?
Oh, no.
And his buddies all just started teasing him. No. It was so funny. This guy was beat red. He was so embarrassed.
tell your wife to get out of my room. I forget what the another one a guy said was, yeah. I do your wife, but the lineup's too long. Jesus. Jesus. You got to tell, you started this. You got to, I've heard your brother Jeff tell the story, speaking of pranks, and we had a few of them that you told us about, hotel pranks, the fire extinguisher.
If you
haven't heard it, folks, go back over the first few episodes, you'll find it. Is your brother Jeff was rooming with
Mark Bergevin. Oh, my God, in Detroit.
Yep. Do you know the story I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. So Bergie normally roomed, I think, with Brett Hall, maybe. Or McGinnis and Hall were out. So Jeff and Bergevin ended up as roommates. And they were, you know, we'd always go for dinner and then you come back to your room, watch ESPN, watch the highlights and order dessert. That was kind of like everybody's routine pretty much.
Right. Right.
So they ordered dessert and whoever had the least seniority had to get up and let the guy in and, you know, sign for the bill.
Right.
So Bergie says, I have more games in the league than you. Oh, fuck.
Well, that's my timer to make sure my computer.
Anything else, you fucking idiot?
No, my God.
And you got a vibrator, a buzzer. Fuck. What are we getting next? A fire alarm?
I'm just looking at options. I got a check coming over tonight. I got to figure out.
Oh my God. So, anyways, they're arguing.
Yeah.
And they're both. You're in your underwear, right? You're in bed.
Sure.
So Jeff finally gets up and he gets the door. And he lets the guy in. The guy comes, rolling in the cart, the food cart. Yeah. Bergie had got up and made Jeff's bed so it looked like they were in bed together. And he pulled the covers over his head and he goes, hurry up, tell that guy to get out of here so we can get back at it. And Jeff's going, Bergie, come on. And he's pulling the sheets and he goes, I don't want anyone to see me in here like this with you. Hurry up, tell that guy to get out of here. Jeff's like, fuck off, Bergie. And the guy's looking at Jeff and goes, sir, I really don't care what's going on in here. Can you just sign the bill? Yeah,
right. So I heard Bergie's even going, where's that ice cream, big boy? Bring that ice cream in here. But when the eagles underneath the sheets.
When the guy was rolling the cart out of the room, Bergie said, Jeff, put the red dress back on and get into bed.
Oh, beautiful.
There's lots of those stories, I'm sure. Fuck, guys. But those two, it was nonstop. Even to this day, they're still screwing around with each other. It's just funny.
Best practical jokers ever. Speaking of funny, Brett Hull, of course, who was a front office guy with St. Louis not too long ago. And Brett doesn't give a shit what he says, right? No. Doesn't give a shit what he said. And I don't know if I told this story where he was on he was hosting a trip with Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
When he was in Dallas. I'll tell the St. Louis story later, but, Cuban comes up with this deal where people auction, it's called Mystery at 30,000 feet.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is. You pay a bunch of dough. You jump on this plane and then they're going to tell you where they're going. Right. And Brett Hull, I'm in Los Angeles when Wayne's fantasy camp was there. So there's 100 guys who paid a bunch of dough to come and play hockey with Wayne, a bunch of other pros, yourself included, Russ.
Yeah.
And Brett was there and we're into the cups pretty good. It was a Scotch cigar night. And if you've never met Brett Hull, you need to know this about him. He's so got funny. No filter,
no
fucking filter. He doesn't care who it is. So he's telling this story. And there's a circle of us standing around, but included in this circle of people listening was this older woman who came as a guest of her husband.
Yeah.
And she's probably touching 80, you know, and look, pure as the driven snow, look like an angel. And Holly is puffing on the cigar, talking about, so anyway, I get on this goddamn plane and we land somewhere down, fuck, I don't know where it is, in South America or something. We get off the plane. It's about 1,000 fucking degrees out, 2,000,000% humidity. And I'm looking around for the hotel. And the guy says, it's just up all these stairs through the jungle up here to the top. You're staying in huts. And Holly goes, and he's about 50 over at that time.
Yeah. You know,
and he says, so he's looking right at the lady while he's drinking his scotch and the cigar. And he goes, so anyway, I'm walking up these stairs, ma'am, and I'm sweating like a fucking fag eating a hot dog. That's only Brett Hull can put it, you know? Jesus. It's like, he got stopped. He was with Kelly Chase going into a game. You know, he went in the front office. Was he the GM in St. Louis or president?
No, he was, I think he was in that role of president.
Yeah, big job anyway.
Yeah,
he had a big job.
Yeah, I can't remember
and not managed. If you looked at his face or something before, you know, it's almost like he didn't even want to go to the fucking game.
Yeah.
You know? And Kelly Chase is talking about they're going to the game. I guess they carpooled a little bit or something. Yeah. And And they're at the security of the player's entrance, you know, down the ramp where the parking lot is. And they're late, you know, and Chasers go, Jesus, Holly, we got to get the fucking game, you know?
Yeah.
Holly's like, whatever. And he stops at the gate and the security guy says, I need your pass. Right. And Brett says, well, I don't have my pass. And the security guy goes, and Chase is like, do you know who it is? He goes, doesn't matter. I need his pass.
Yeah.
And Holly says, well, I don't have it. And the guy says, well, I can't let you in. So Brett says, no problem. And he turns around and goes home.
So Chaser and Holly are working for Discovery Land Company, same company I'm working for in Nashville.
Right. Yep.
And so they're selling the development. And
right.
And Holly's doing a great job. You know, we all had
this is a huge high-end real estate company that you're working for, right?
Right, exactly. So they're in Nashville. Right. They got their real estate licenses. They bought homes there. And Holly's doing everything you have to do, right? So Chaser's going, fuck, I'm so impressed with Holly. He's doing a great job. And he goes, right. But, you know, the HR people, they want to meet with you for 3 hours to go over all the rules. And they keep emailing us, when can we meet? And Holly isn't responding. And then finally, this lady sends out this nasty email going, Brett, pick a day that you're available to meet with us for 3 hours for HR. And he goes, July 32nd.
I saw him in in fact, you were there too. There was he played golf with Wayne and Brett, and Mario Lemieux played golf against Mike Weir
I was there.
Yeah, awesome. You were there because you guys flew in in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And Halifax, if you've never been there, there's like I forget what they call it, but there's five bars that are all attached.
Yeah.
You can walk indoors to each one.
The fucking whole city's there every night.
I want to say Liquor Dome or something like that. Everyone's there. Yeah. Yeah. All the kids are there too. Yeah. They do their homework and then they come down to get fucking smashed. It's beautiful. And, you know, you'd think Holly would say stuff to someone, there'd be a punchline, but there never was, you know. And he's sitting at the bar and there's people sort of, I'm behind him and we're all sitting around, they're getting annihilated. And there's a sort of lineup of people who want to get his autograph, right?
Yeah.
And some young girl, you know, or kid about 15 or 16 sneaks his way up to the front where Brett is, and Brett's sitting there, you know, sort of disgusted with life, you know? And the kid says, excuse me, and he looks at him, right?
Yeah.
Brett looks at the kid, he goes, can I get your autograph? And Holly goes, fuck off. But there's no punchline. Yeah. You know, you might do that as a joke. I'm just kidding. You know, come on, let's get a picture. But he just turns back around and never says anything. But it was so funny. You know,
the guy was
so freaking funny, man.
He is hilarious. God, I love him.
Beauty.
Great, great man.
Rusty.
Yeah, Brody. I haven't even started drinking yet.
Yeah, we've put another what's on tonight? What do we got? Nice little red, couple bottles of red.
Having Bure Family Wines lately, Val Bure. It's fabulous wine.
You got the hockey player.
Yeah, yeah. Sent me some wines up here at Gosser in Idaho. I've been pounding those with my friends. So
nice.
I don't know what I'm gonna get into something. Maybe a little white tonight.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, I made my own wine. Then we got to get out of here. I made my own wine, Russ.
Yeah.
I got the kit. I bought everything. I brought it home, got the grapes. So I thought I'd make my own batch of wine. I thought, this might be pretty good. So I sent it away to get it analyzed.
Yeah.
And I got an email back from them. They said, thanks very much, Mr. Jerome. We got your sample. And yes, your horse has diabetes. We got to get out of here.
Oh, yeah.
That's five. Number five done. Don't you love the stuff Brett Hull is made of? Unbelievable. Another great show, Rusty. Stick around. We're going to be back next week with another show of the Suspendables, Jerome and Courtney Unleashed. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.